Hello and welcome to Talk Star Wars. I'm your host, Rob.
And I'm Brad.
Hey.
Hey, how you doing? Good. Just a flavor, to your Chuck D, as always.
Run TSW.
Yeah.
And I do.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. What's new? Much going on?
No, to be honest.
Okay.
No.
That's all right.
Yourself?
Yeah. You know, here and there, like bits and pieces. Nothing. I've got 2 weeks by myself coming up. The lovely Jen is visiting America with her best friend as a sort of rite of passage for how long they've known each other, and I'm going to be left on my lonesome for 2 weeks. So
we should celebrate our friendiversary at some point.
We should.
How long have we known each other now? 13 years?
It'll be 13 years in October.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so why don't we go on holiday? The real question.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's something to talk about off air.
Yeah.
Make that work. Well, they're going to be. There's going to be Galaxy's Edge.
Are we going to wait for the Star Wars thing?
Galaxy's Edge in a few years. There you go. That probably works for me.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk some Star Wars.
Oh, that's what we're here for.
So we had a few. We had a stacked show in terms of listener communications this week. They've been very generous to us, and we're very grateful for that.
Yeah.
I've been reliably informed that we have an iTunes review incoming, but it hasn't arrived at the time of recording. So, Adam. Who left the review, Adam Kay, very kind of you to do so. Thank you very much. And I will be sure to read it when it arrives on the show so everybody could enjoy it. So our first comments this week come from Vesuvi, who writes, "Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Brad. You're welcome. In regards to Billy Dee Williams returning for episode 9, the speculation started after the 81-year-old actor told an interviewer at MegaCon Orlando in May, there are so many cons.
There's so many.
That he's.
I know Dave Prowse needs money, but bloody hell.
Apparently. So he told me if you're in MegaCon that he has changed his diet and begun working out regularly. These things might just be an attempt to improve his quality of life in his golden years, but they also happen to be the same things that Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill were contractually obligated to do when they signed on to do episode 7. So the leap in logic.
I wouldn't sign that contract. That sounds horrible.
I've been really busy, tough, not getting the money. So the leap in logic and subsequent internet heightened chicken with a head cut off effect. That's a good word for it.
It really is.
If we could find
a compound,
we could find a shorter, kind of punchier one that maybe we could hashtag, that might work.
Yeah.
Sprang from there. Mr. Williams' son, Corey, has addressed the rumours but stayed relatively neutral in his wording. My best guess is...
I really hope his middle name's D as well.
Corey D. Williams.
Yeah, that doesn't work for us, does it?
No. And then the next child in the succession is D.
Yeah.
Then it's like a droid, you know.
Yeah, box it, ship it.
Yeah. My best guess is that if Lando does return, it will be for a minor role at best. But we shall see. Faithfully, Aunt Vesuvi. P.S. So these actually came as two separate emails, but I've, you know...
Yeah, that's very clever
together for the, yeah, you know, for the purposes of expedition. I've been quoting an erroneous result to you, probably because I'm too vain to wear my eyeglasses even when I'm alone staring at my laptop. I feel your pain. Solo is actually number 12 worldwide for 2018 so far. It's number 5 only in the US. Still, not too shabby, I say.
That's fine.
Feel free to flagellate me.
Ooh, man. There's enough we can't refuse.
As ever, Aunt Vesuvi, who's nearly blind in one eye.
As a result of a flagellation?
I'm guessing so, yeah. A flagellation gone wrong.
Take it easy. Cheeky contract.
Indeed. So, that's apparently where the Billy D thing comes from, the rumbling.
Last episode, I said the Billy D thing feels a bit phoned in to me. We're kind of, I suppose we better get Lando now. We can't use Leia. But I do believe they're going to do it.
I think they will. I think
it's a shame that's what it took to get Lando involved. I think it's more guaranteed than the Kenobi movie is. Yeah,
I think you're right. You know, I do remember way back. This is, you know, in the 20s in TSW's history. I theorized that of a way they could bring Lando in, which would be to so originally, I have to give a bit of history for this. There was no understanding of what Canto Bight was. There was a picture doing the rounds of Leia wearing black, like a funeral shroud style outfit. And the theory I postulated was that there might be a sort of memorial service for Han Solo, because obviously he's quite, you know, within the Resistance and the Rebellion, he's quite important. So it's important to kind of commemorate him.
Yes.
And I remember thinking that was a way they could have brought Lando in. I mean, admittedly, I was relying on a lot of things. Like, for example, that they would take any of the threads from episode 7 and follow them through. So there was that, because I was going to, my theory, my sort of plot for episode 8 revolved around a couple of different side missions, which was rather than having, this was before I think we knew about Rose Tycho, Finn and Poe were going to be, in my head, they were going to be trying to find out what Maz Kanata's story was and how the lightsaber came to be in her possession.
Which is still something that needs addressing because it's a gaping plot hole at the moment.
Yeah, it's just one of those threads that's just been left dangling. And considering how thoroughly they pruned the rest, you'd think they'd have done something with it. But
if that was kind of a large part of my Mazzy Snoke theory I was clinging on to until Last Jedi.
Yeah, we discussed that theory, and at the time it was, you know, it was a long shot, but it was cromulent.
Yeah.
It was, there was certainly more, you know, more they could have done with that character, I guess is a fair way to say it.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the time I was sort of thinking, okay, well, you could, if you needed somebody with underworld connections to kind of do a bit of digging, Lando was the obvious choice. Yes. And then the news started to come out that Lando wasn't involved in episode 8, and that put a damper on that theory. And then it was, oh, it's Canto Bight. Mm-hmm. It's like a casino planet. It's going to be a sort of espionage mission to find a code cracker. And eventually the whole thing fell apart.
Mm-hmm. I heard quite a few people thought that Lando could easily have filled Benicio Del Toro's role.
Kind of, yeah. But you want him to be, I mean, I suppose the way they took it, where, what's his name? DJ ended up being sort of, you know, the betrayer at the end of the movie. Obviously, we've done that with Lando before.
Which is why it wouldn't have been expected for Lando to go back evil again.
I suppose so, but then people would have been kind of upset and demanding it would be unstuck. If that, you know, they wouldn't, I don't imagine people would have wanted that to stick.
Yeah, the way they did Last Jedi, no one said that.
True story. But anyway, so this is where the Billy Dee stuff comes from. The notion that he's kind of back in shape and he's, you know, trying to get back in shape and he's sort of modified his diet and stuff. And again, as Vasuvi rightly points out, it could just be he's getting on, he's not been in great health.
He knows we're still making Batman movies, it's his time to shine eventually.
There you go. Like, Two-Face was never, the Burton Two-Face was never resolved properly. So
exactly, you know,
there's every reason why he could fill that role. It would be an odd sell, but
yeah,
I'd give it a go.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, they've done, you know, some weird takes on Batman with the whole Nolan verse, so
yeah, totally.
But there you go. So you were telling me before we started recording about the latest Rebel Force Radio having something to say, like a rumbling on that.
They seem very confident in their sources that Billy Dee Williams is signed on for episode 9. It's long and short of it. Obviously, I feel our position should be that's not confirmed by StarWars.com. Sure. That's not confirmed by Lucasfilm or Disney. So don't bite until you eye it. But for my part, I think Rebel Force Radio have a good track record for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's certainly something they have a good track record for.
Yeah.
It's a list. It has a length. Mileage may vary.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think it is almost certainly on the cards. I think it wouldn't have been had it not been for the fact of the unfortunate passing of Carrie Fisher.
Which is what kind of undermines it a little for me. Yeah. Even if I had been around, you could have invited him.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. You know,
because
really
let's not get Nine Numbs in it.
True, yeah.
Unless you bring in Nine Numb, but not Lando.
It does feel like, you know, what's going on there?
It's a bit, really? You know, come on, guys.
I reckon, right, that's Nine Numb just telling, like, really good stories about, on Endor. He's got in the right ears. He's one of those people. He knows how to grease the wheel. He knows how to work his way up the chain. He's on, like, in the right ears going, I'll tell you what, right, Lando, he's useless up there. He was just like, oh, I don't know what's going on. Oh, help. Like,
oh, it's all sticky.
And he told me, I'm not going to go too far on it, but he told me behind the scenes that at the Battle of Tanab, he was mostly delegating. It makes me think maybe he's greased the wheels and he's just kind of worked his way into a sort of good position. Meanwhile, Lando is sat on they did establish what he did went on to do, didn't they? Another kind of another business operation. He's sort of sat there.
Anything for Lando post Jedi in the new canon?
I don't know. This is I'm not sure now. I felt like there was, but now I'm saying that I'm kind of in two minds about whether or not that's true. But you know, he sort of sat there in his sort of chair, just looking out on an admittedly successful business venture, going, "What might have been." But they, you know, it's. So he's, I don't know, I don't want to kind of play like come down too hard on it, but Nine Numbers always struck me as a bit of a slimy type.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I've always been more of a Lando guy when it comes to, if you force me to choose, it's more of a a Lando guy than a Nine Numb guy. Just it's just how I can't help it, you know.
Okay.
I just think he's great.
That's cool.
Yeah. It looks like there is nothing post Jedi. Yeah, so there you go. There's a big space to play in there.
Yeah, cool.
So, I mean, they have the connected materials set in place, so they could bridge the gap and kind of explain him in using books and comics and things like that, which would work for, you know, the sort of cross-connected fans, and then for the casuals, it's like, oh, I remember him.
Yeah.
That might be sufficient, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Lando's a significant enough character that you don't have to be a super fan to know who he is.
No, exactly, yeah. But it's more, you know, the people who want to know the kind of backstory behind it would have connected materials to work with, and then for the sort of just the moviegoers, it would just be like, oh, cool, I know him.
Yeah.
Excellent. So that might work, you know.
Yeah.
So thank you for that, Vasuvi. Do you want to read the next one from Bunglebush?
Sure. From Bunglebush. Hi guys, it's Bunglebush here. Let's get to the question before someone scores on the World Cup. Now, I'm not an expert on Star Wars canon, and I'm sure if you dig deep into it, this has been discussed further in Star Wars canon. But Han, or Han, says that a Millennium Falcon made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs. He never says that a parsec is a measure of time. He just said he made it in less than 12 of them. So maybe he meant that the Falcon calculated a shortcut. In other words, he made the route shorter, and if the route is shorter, then it would probably take less time as well. So you see, people are jumping to conclusions that Han made a mistake in saying parsecs. Maybe, just maybe, he meant exactly what he said. What do you guys think? Bunglebush out, take care, and long live the Commonwealth.
Long live the Commonwealth, indeed. Thank you for that, Bunglebush. Yeah. It's the 12 parsecs thing is one of those things that's, over the years, has just been through so many transformations.
It's been hashed out and reiterated a few times. Yeah.
So that's kind of
the main mistake. The main mistake that never gets addressed is it really should be fewer than 12 parsecs.
There you go. See, that's the grander indiscretion to me.
Yeah, but you know, no one. What can I say? Auntie Kath won't return my calls.
No, this is true.
For various reasons.
So, I wonder if the reason people jump to that. To the thing is because just before that they've had the conversation about it being a fast ship, and that's the kind of the direct, you know, the most direct connection.
To break it down for people who are kind of new to this sure where this all come from, a parsec is the distance that light travels in a second. It is to a second what a light year is to a year. It is very much a measurement of distance.
Yeah.
When Han delivers that line in episode 4, maybe less than 12 parsecs, because we hear sec and assume second, which is what it is a contraction for, but not in the way we're expecting, we do leap to the conclusion that it's a measure of time.
Yeah.
And if you don't know, a parsec is a real thing. It sounds like a sci-fi made up.
Totally.
Passage of time.
Yeah.
Which is probably, when I was a kid watching it, that was probably what I thought it was.
Yeah.
Did George Lucas know a parsec was a unit of distance, or did he think it was a measurement of time when he wrote the dialogue? That's very much been lost to the mists of time and possibly to the mists of distance as well.
Nice. Yeah. Carry on.
This is my job.
Yeah.
So whether he did or he didn't, then if he thought it was a measurement of time and didn't realise it was a measure of distance, then that's just a straight up goof. These things happen in movies, and fine, let's roll with it. Once I've discovered that a parsec was a unit of distance, that then does raise the question, well, what does he mean?
Yeah.
What I think is interesting, knowing that, is the reaction shot from Alec Guinness is so good.
Yeah.
Alec Guinness has this kind of skeptical eyebrow raise and just kind of a nod, the kind of nod you give when you want to start backing out of a room away from a mad person.
Yeah.
Just kind of nod and back away.
Oh, that's
and
that's
what's great about Alec Guinness's performance there is that could be read as a Parsec is a unit of speed or time, and Alec Guinness just, or everyone just thinks that he's bragging and making it up, so he's just kind of nodding assentingly along. Or Obi-Wan does know that a Parsec is a unit of distance, and
he knows
it's under the impression Han thinks it's a measurement of time.
Yeah.
And he's giving kind of a knowing, right, kind of nod. Now, I think that's very much an undersung part of Alec Guinness's performance in Star Wars.
I would totally agree. And there's the, I don't know if you've seen it, you almost certainly have, the cut of somebody, they've spliced together shots from the prequels in between Obi-Wan's speech about Darth Vader.
Yeah.
And Anakin Skywalker. And
just
that performance anyway is obviously tremendous, but when you juxtapose it with the shots from the prequels, it has this extra emotional resonance just by virtue of how cool it, how well it's done.
Yeah.
It's just one of those, and it's one of those things, again, it's such a professional performance by a tremendously talented actor.
Absolutely. Yeah.
These things are kind of not so much lost to the mist of time, but they're kind of open to interpretation, kind of ad nauseum.
I do think his performance is one of the, I mean, it's very easy shooting fish in a barrel to criticize some of the acting in Star Wars, but I think Alec Guinness is superb in it.
Yeah, totally.
All the way through.
Yeah.
There's a lot of very good actors in Star Wars who aren't necessarily giving their best performances in Star Wars movies, and there's probably various reasons for that. We've kind of gone over into the ground again and again.
Indeed.
But Alec Guinness absolutely shines in this role, though. And as we say, he didn't have that whole mythology to deal with. A lot of that was speculation off the script he was given.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he handled it. Anyway, moving on with the Parsec thing.
Yes.
So as time went on, Return of the Jedi came out, and we kind of entered the dark times between Jedi and the Thrawn trilogy, where not a lot was being produced outside of the West End Games tabletop RPGs, and maybe a couple of video games was all you really got. Because, you know, everyone kind of thought Star Wars was done. And people started going, hang on, a Parsec is a unit of distance. Why is he using that to show off how fast the ship is?
Yeah.
To my understanding, the question was finally addressed in Anthony Crispin's Han Solo trilogy, where it was revealed that the Kessel Run, it's not the Maw, is it? The Maw was the Imperial construction
that's
facility.
The name, yeah, I think that's the name of the mining facility on at the other end of the Kessel Run.
Yeah, the Kessel Run went round a load of black holes, if I remember right.
It was, yeah, it was a series of black holes kind of on the edges of a fast route, yeah. So it was kind of, it was how close you were willing to go to the black holes to shave kind of micro, microparsecs? To shave distance off your overall run. I think the understanding was that the Falcon's computer was sufficiently sophisticated to be able to compute that.
Yeah.
It's
about 10 years since I read those books, but yeah, that's kind of my memory of it. Yeah.
And they do it again in the Jedi Academy trilogy, right? When they escape the Maw.
Yes, so they revisit that concept, which was, yeah, was good times.
Yeah, it was good times.
And and that was kind of how they, and then with the knowledge of that series of books, that line now makes sense, because he is really proud of the fact he's managed to do it in a shorter distance than anyone else has managed to. So that's worth showing off. So now at that point, we know that Han was, or if we take the EU's canon, it's stated that he is bragging about doing it within a unit of distance.
Yes.
And whether or not, and again, back to the strength of Guinness's performance, his reaction shot to interpret it either way still works.
Yeah.
Obviously, the canon got scrapped, and then we finally saw the Kessel Run happen again in Solo about a month ago. And that was kind of based off the Kessel Run black hole idea, but redressed, and I think in a way that worked better in a visual medium.
Oh, totally. Yeah, it would have been hard to sell.
Yeah.
Why do they just keep going back around the same black hole over and over and over again? It's like, no, they're different. It's hard. They're all, yeah. They all look quite similar.
it wouldn't. They did what they needed to do to make it a better film, which is what I think was the right decision. Mm-hmm. And it gave us a lovely shot of the Star Destroyer.
Yes.
That might actually now be my favourite shot in all of Star Wars. Just because I love Star Destroyers anyway.
It really is good.
Yeah, but that's kind of the Parsec deal, mm-hmm. and the various iterations it's taken over the years. I kind of hope my meandering, bumbling discourse made sense, Bungalbush.
I think it made perfect sense, and I'm sure Bungalbush agrees.
Yeah, so
we'll find out.
That's kind of the crash course in how many different takes there's been on that line of dialogue over the years.
Yeah,
In terms of, you're saying you're not only into canon. That's fine. You can dip into it and enjoy it as much or as little as you want to.
Yeah.
But as you're asking, what you saw in Solo is now the official canon explanation for that line of dialogue.
Yeah, there you go. So it's a unit of distance, and they do it in a much shorter, because they established that the safest route is 20. So there's quite a big gap in terms of how much there is. So there you go, Bungalbush. There's your answer. So hopefully that's to your satisfaction. Let us know, either via email or Twitter. Your choice. So we have another email from Adam Kay, who writes, "Thank you so much for reading my email. That was so fun to listen to. I've got one for you both. If J.J. Abrams called you tomorrow and asked for one idea you'd like to see happen in Episode 9, what would you tell him? These ideas can range from a simple Easter egg to an event that carries a story plot. Anything you want. For example, I personally would love to see Vader's saber return. There was no explanation yet as to how Luke's saber was recovered, and Vader's saber was lost in the same fashion. Maybe the Knights of Ren was ordered by Kylo to retrieve it, which would explain their absence. How cool would it be to see Kylo wield it? It'd be a fitting reward for his rise to Supreme Leader following Snoke's death. Maybe it would even activate a Force Vision like Luke's saber did for Rey in The Force Awakens. I wouldn't mind seeing Vader make a cameo through a Force Vision, but I digress. What do you got, boys? Keep up the awesome work, and thanks again, Adam Kay." That is a great question.
That is, I like him.
There's so many places that can go. And in fact, in my mind, as I was reading this question, my mind was bouncing kind of ideas in like a ping pong table inside my head.
Okay, so if, right, we'll do this one at a time, shall we? If JJ was called you tomorrow and asked for one idea like the Episode 9, what would you tell him? It could be an Easter egg or a major event, anything you want. Anything leap immediately to mind for you?
See, funnily enough, I ended up kind of bouncing off his ideas more than I came with my own. I would like to see a visual depiction of a holocron on a film.
Okay.
Because I haven't had that yet.
That's true.
That would be cool. And especially Kylo's taken out his authority figure and his mentor.
Mm.
He now needs to be more powerful, and he's going to want to...
Were you thinking if you find Vader's holocron?
Potentially, or, you know, Palpatine's perhaps. You know, one of those would work. Hopefully Palpatine just pops in and goes, "You killed your master, you pillock." That would be awesome.
No, wait, that's what you're supposed to do.
No, eventually. Not yet.
Like that.
Yeah, and if it's Palpatine, I'll be...
Okay, Carlton's voice for some reason. Like that.
If he comes in as Palpacino, that would doubly make my movie.
Yeah.
What do you do? Anyway, a holocron. A Sith holocron on screen, which we haven't had before in a film, would be awesome. And especially would tie in nicely with his kind of... I want them... The way I kind of looked at it is I want them to touch on the idea that he's second-guessing his choice to kill Snoke in The Last Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
And to kind of, not so much that he thinks it's a bad idea, because I'm sure it's very sensible for him to want to kind of surpass him eventually, but maybe the timing and maybe the rationale behind it, maybe that's what he starts to question, because he's done it to kind of get Rey on side, and then his gambit to sort of recruit her has failed.
And there's so much to wrap up in Episode 9.
There is a lot, and nothing. Hey? There's simultaneously nothing and everything.
There's a lot to wrap up, because there was a lot that was forgotten about. Episode 8 did end and conclusively wrap up a lot of storylines. As I feel, I have to say every episode, I'm not a hater of Last Jedi. Sure. And I think there's a lot of storylines and stuff it wrapped up fine.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lot of stuff that got has got completely ignored. The concept of the Knights of Ren is something that's been ignored for two complete films so far.
Yeah, indeed.
Either stop referencing them or do something with them.
Well, because
we expand use materials and the fans keep going about Knights of Ren, we have seen nothing. Yeah. Nothing has been revealed yet. His name hasn't been explained. Why? Because obviously there's an extra name, Kylo Ren of the Knights of Ren. Nothing has been explained unless it's in like a little side paragraph of a DK image book somewhere.
Yeah,
some visual dictionary might have a reference to it, but that's not enough because they were such a big part of the marketing for Force Awakens.
They're in that vision,
they've done nothing with them.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those, is it ever going to be addressed? Or are we just going to let that drop? Is Rian Johnson's other trilogy going to focus on the Knights of Stimpy? What are we doing with this concept?
That's an obscure reference, but I love it.
Yeah. I'm kind of hoping I've covered the age range there.
Yeah. That's a pretty good demographic spread, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of Force Awakens needs. There's a lot of Episode 9 needs to pick up from Force Awakens.
Yeah,
great. A lot of stuff has been finished conclusively in Last Jedi. Brilliant.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of stuff you need to go back and pick up.
Yeah,
like the Knights of Ren,
and obviously,
like where Luke's lightsaber came from.
JJ is positioned.
Like Kylo being obsessed with Darth Vader is a concept that's just dropped.
Yeah, yeah. Early on in Last Jedi, they drop that, don't they? Because he goes through the whole, you know, he's berating him in the context of Darth Vader.
Yeah.
You know, but after that, it's never kind of referenced again. I mean, a holocron would be cool. Knights of Ren would be cool. I sort of feel like there's an obvious way to work them in, mm-hmm. which is to have them kind of the equivalent of Ren's version of the Praetorian Guard.
Totally. I kind of thought they'd be almost like the, what's the gang Darth Maul pulls together in Clone Wars or something syndicate?
Oh, the Pike Syndicate.
Thank you. Yeah, basically like the Travelling Wilburys of Evil.
Yeah.
They would be, I thought they were going to be something like that originally, but yeah, like his version for Praetorian Guard.
Yeah.
Works fine. Yeah.
Totally.
Just give me something. Don't just have that name kind of floating out of the ether.
Yeah, I sort of feel like he could use them like kind of as he's a spider's body and they're the legs. Just he sort of sends them out to do mm-hmm. to strike out a little thing.
Yeah, I'm down with that. That's kind of the impression we've got, but they've never given us anything.
Yeah, yeah. It's there's a lot they can do with it, and mm-hmm. you know, as long as they do something with it, that would be cool.
Yeah, totally. I think what I'd like to see. No, I've had my massive rent.
That's all right.
It's kind of what I do.
Yeah.
I would like episode 9 to end. I want a conclusive end. It could be a happy ending with people still alive looking out to their future. It could be a sad ending with just like a complete pathos. I don't think they will do, but would work.
Unlikely, yeah.
But I don't want kind of a tease of, we might do more movies. I want 9 to end. Mm-hmm. And then we go and do something new.
Yeah,
because we've had three rule of three carries across all creative arts.
Yep,
and we've had three lots of three. Perfect. Don't do any more. Go do something new.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
It's a divisive one,
mm-hmm.
But I am not really on board with Rey's parents just being total randoms. I like the idea that she's tied into the main saga. I don't know how. I don't have an explanation. I don't have a theory. But I would just like a stronger explanation of how she came to be involved in the story rather than BB-8 randomly bumping into her on a planet. I want the Force to be at work some way in this.
Well, there kind of is, because, I mean, they talk about the darkness rising and the light to meet it in Last Jedi, mm-hmm. right? So she's kind of a reaction to the sort of spread of the First Order and the gradually building power of Snoke and Kylo Ren. So they kind of touch on it, but I know what you mean. Mm-hmm. There's a certain lack of satisfaction to that.
Yeah.
Although
I think Rian Johnson was very clever with the way he dealt with it.
Yeah.
Because he took a lightsaber to a lot of the story threads he didn't like.
Sure.
That one with, I think it's Kylo Ren just says, oh, we're just junkers. Yeah. Or junkies, can't remember what he says.
Junkers, I think.
It just cuts, that story for is cut, but done in such a way that if it turned out Kylo Ren was lying, it would be totally believable.
Yeah, absolutely. He's so
I think praise to Ryan Johnson for the way he handled that.
Yeah.
That was a lot of stuff he went, nope, that's done, that's done, that's done. That one was, that's how I'd like it, but it could be taken another way. I thought that was very clever of him.
Mm-hmm. My only thing about Rey's parentage is I feel like if they so my thought on this is twofold. So if they pop her back in as somebody of import now, mm-hmm. it will, one, look like a backpedal. On a meta level, I don't think they would be likely to do. And two, there's this unease I have about the idea that the whole thing of Last Jedi was the Force can be kind of any, you know, the Force can reside within anybody, and there's no
Broom Boy.
Yeah, Broom Boy. You know, it's the kind of, there's a certain spark to it that doesn't have, it has its own will, basically.
Mm-hmm.
If you, what I said about it at the time, if you were to make Rey a Skywalker, success is entirely, and success and power is entirely determined on who your parents are.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go down that route of, you know, it's almost like nepotism, you know, within the Star Wars universe. And say, if they find a way to work it where it's not necessarily as clear cut as, oh, she's a Skywalker all along.
That would be a cop out.
Yeah, I'm willing to give it a go, but that's kind of my thinking as to why it doesn't quite gel for me.
I would respectfully disagree with your first point about them not backpedaling, purely because there's been God knows how many retcons and redo overs over Star Wars over the years. They can't maintain continuity within a single film.
True, but I think in the modern,
from a certain point of view.
Yeah, no, that's fair. But in the modern with the modern Star Wars climate, I think the most likely thing they would do is double down rather than backpedal. Because I think there's going to be this, and it's annoying that this is the case, but there's going to be this reluctance to give in to this kind of perception of weakness.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that I think cost them with Solo, because I've been led to understand that there was a certain stubborn desire to show faith in Solo, which meant holding to that May release date. And I think actually that was to their detriment.
I agree.
So I think they're going to want to project confidence in episode 9 for similar reasons, although it's not to do with the production. It's very much to do with the reception of episode 8. So I think they're going to be very much keen to show faith in it and show confidence in it. So I think if they have, you know, they've banked a lot on Rian Johnson, ultimately. They've given him the middle part of a trilogy, and they've also given him his own trilogy to be determined.
It was very brave, because am I right in thinking he was given his own trilogy before Last Jedi had even been released?
Yes.
Yeah,
it was about a month or so before it was announced that he was going to get his own trilogy, and everybody was like, oh, this must be great then.
That kind of ties into your second point about how the Force can kind of reside within everyone. I am totally on board for that. I'm totally on board for Jedi and Force users anywhere in the galaxy. But the saga movies as a 9-movie story need to be tighter than that. We can't, in a 9-book series, you can't just suddenly have a number 7, oh, here's Rando McRando, she's going to fix everything. Hmm. There needs to be some cohesion to it.
Well, true. I think the cohesion that you seek is not on the light side of the Force. I think it's Ben.
Okay.
I think it's his, you know, episode 9. I'm not going to say it's his going to be his movie, but I think the way they've developed his character of Kylo over the course of 7 and 8 suggests to me that he's, you know, he's the one thing I heard about when they were talking about George's 3-trilogy plan. You know, I don't know where this was kind of touched on. It might have been in that Secret History of Star Wars book I read way back.
Mm-hmm.
The first trilogy was about Darth Vader's rise.
Yeah.
Second trilogy was about Darth Vader's redemption. Mm-hmm. And then the third was about his legacy. And his legacy is, you know, Ben Solo kind of trying to emulate Granddad. But actually the sort of selective emulation where it's like, oh, all the bits that are cool and let me wear a cape.
Yeah. I think that's part of the struggle I have with episodes 7 and 8. When I say struggle, I do really enjoy 7 and 8.
That's fine.
But I readily accept the original trilogy as a trilogy. Of course, I do. Yeah. The other movie, the prequel trilogy, they tied together great for me. And the reason they tied together great is I've always seen the movies of Star Wars, which they were up until Rogue One, really, being Anakin's story.
Yeah.
The whole thing, even when he's, as you say, even when he's the bad guy in the original trilogy, he is still very much one of, if not the central character, even though Luke is ostensibly the hero.
Yeah.
And I really feel he's missing from 7 and 8. More so from 8, because obviously, as we said in 7, there's a kind of fanboy obsession with him.
Yes.
The synthetic voice, the mask. Yeah, the dark cloak, it's all in there. I think one of the cleverest things Force Awakens did was Force Awakens was actually, artistically speaking, actually a Star Wars movie about Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because we all, two things we wondered about Force Awakens was, where's Luke? Where's Luke? Why isn't Luke in any of the marketing? We go in and the whole thing is, where's Luke?
Yeah.
Genius.
Yeah, totally.
And the other concern we had was we were worried Kylo Ren wasn't going to be a good enough villain to live up to what we'd had in Darth Vader. What do we get? A villain who's worried he's not going to live up to be Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Absolute genius.
Yeah, it's great.
Like I say, I think one of Episode 8's flaws is it didn't carry the shadow of Vader strongly enough.
No, I think you're right. I totally agree. I think it's a really good point. I think that the strength of 7 is, like you say, it's almost the meta-narrative. You know, we're being told, like, Luke's not here, Luke's not here, Luke's not here. It's been in front of our faces for months.
Yeah.
And then we go in and it's like, oh, okay, nobody knows. That's even better. Because now I don't feel so bad about not knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And because instantly you're on a level pegging with all the characters.
Yeah.
In the same way.
It was very clever.
Yeah, and in the same way, you know, I remember you talking about this at the time. Kylo looked to you like a poor man's Vader. And in the film, that's his biggest fear, is to be a poor man's Vader. You know, it's great. And I think Episode 8, they don't do a good enough job of weaving that Vader thread in after that first interaction with the two of them. After that, it's just never touched again. I don't think. I'd have to go back and watch it again. I haven't done it in a while, but I don't recall.
I think 9, come back to is Adam, wasn't it? Sorry. His question should, I would like to see cohesion and completion is what I want out of Episode 9.
Fair.
More than cameos from Boba Fett or a Wampa chorus girl kick line. What I want is cohesion and completion.
Yeah. I think
like I say, there is no one. I do not envy J.J. Abrams in the slightest with the job he has to do here.
No.
I would not take that job.
No, indeed. There was a cool bit that Adam wrote that I picked up on that it kind of made an idea jump into my head. So it was talking about the lightsaber and how it could activate a force vision like Luke's saber did.
Brilliant. Would love that.
How cool would it be, right? So this is what popped into my head. So the whole thing is, you know, like you said, Episode 7, you touched on it perfectly. Episode 7 is Kylo worried he's a poor man's Vader.
Mm-hmm.
He gets a force vision when he touches the lightsaber of Vader's kind of struggle with not being enough of a big bad, especially towards the end of his kind of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what kind of starts him on his, you know, starts him to, makes him wobble, basically.
Yeah.
So I like the idea that he's kind of, by the time Episode 9 starts, he's kind of galvanized his power and he's really kind of dead set. He's fully dark and everything. The Knights of Ren bring him the lightsaber that they've recovered from wherever. I think they touched on it in the Delilah S. Dawson story, The Perfect Weapon. The strong sense is that that's Darth Vader's lightsaber, the object that that Bazina Tal retrieves.
Oh, that wasn't the interpretation I had, but okay.
How did you get it?
I thought it was Vader's helmet, because she goes to Endor to collect it, which is where it was burnt, and that's what Kylo Ren's got in Force Awakens.
That's true. I think the size of the box was what made me think. I seem to recall there was some allusion to the size.
I haven't read it since before Force Awakens came out, same. But that was my take home from it.
Yeah, I seem to recall there was, you know, some but sort
he's
of...
He's never expressly stated what it
no,
is.
No, this is true. So, you know, maybe in the similar vein, they kind of bring him the lightsaber. He's like, now I've got everything I need. And he touches it. And the first thing it gives him is this massive amount of doubt and self kind of self-questioning.
Yeah.
And the whole film is about him sort of struggling to balance that.
I would love Kylo Ren to go down that path. I don't know that Vader's lightsaber is the right item to do it with, because Vader's lightsaber, the red one we first see in episode 4, he made from when he was Vader.
Yeah.
In the Iron Lung. You know, it's there, the Anakin's lightsaber, which Luke and then Rey subsequently owned, has been through a lot of emotion. It has murdered a lot of children, but it has also been present for redemption and heroic escapades and conflict. Vader's red-bladed lightsaber just has a lot of blood on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's, I wonder if we are going down the road of physical objects can take on force impressions, which I think is going to be a thing now. Yeah. I don't know if there will be any goodness in that weapon.
No, that's true. But, you know, if it's the whole vision is kind of mixes of the past and the present and the future. Mm-hmm. With Anakin Saber, which then obviously, like you say, goes to Luke and then to Rey. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's some kind of visions there that you start to see, you know, like on the throne room on the Death Star, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that okay, yeah, be a hint. Yeah,
that work. Kind of the stuff. Yeah. Because by that point, he's already kind of in some conflict. Because Luke's picking up on it by sort of, you know, by the time they get to the throne room, it's certainly been discussed.
Yeah.
So maybe, I don't know, maybe something like that. I think you're right that. It doesn't have to be that item, but I think an item doing that might be kind of cool.
Yeah, okay.
Just a thought. Like I say, it was just something that popped into my head when I read Adam's question.
That's cool.
That sort of something that popped into my head as a kind of a cool, you know, a different take on a similar premise of what we got in Force Awakens.
Yeah, yeah.
But sort of seen from the different point of view. You could even make it kind of, it would be a very weird visual, but you could make it kind of almost agonized using visual tricks. You know, like obviously the Luke Saber vision is very clear and you can see everything going on and it's all very, you know, everything's crystal clear. You can see exactly what's happening and there's very little left to interpretation. With a crystal with a lightsaber containing a crystal that's been bled, you could end up with this kind of almost like a pained lens through which you view any visions that are kind of associated with it. So they could achieve a really kind of quite striking effect doing something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, Adam, thank you for that.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Stranding for a while.
I don't know if that's what you expected to hear from that.
Would you like to see Vader make a cameo in episode 9, possibly for a Force vision?
It would probably make sense, you know, if they're going to pick up that thread, which I think you're right, I think they should, that would be a way of handling it.
Yeah.
You know, a bit like, do you remember I'm sure you do, the Thrawn trilogy when Luke is sort of conversing with Anakin and then Anakin is trying to sort of, I can't remember if it's actually Anakin trying to convince Leia that he changed his ways because Leia never saw it. Yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah,
but in any case, there was that whole sort of interplay between Luke and Anakin as Force ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
You could have something like that with Kylo, where actually it's Anakin trying to appeal to his better nature, and he's not having any of it.
Yeah,
you know, because he's too far gone down that dark path. Perhaps. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, it's Steve way back when. May he rest in peace. from a proverbial point of view, he was always saying like, if you can redeem somebody who's basically just worked his way through a primary school with his blade, you can redeem anybody.
Yeah.
So Kylo hasn't done anything to that degree himself. You know, Snoke was kind of responsible for the Starkiller base wiping out the Hosnian system. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could make the argument that Hux is even responsible for that by sort of, you know, being in command of the military wing. So Kylo's hands are pretty clean. Sorry?
I love Hux so much.
Oh, he's great. He's very underserved in episode 8, and I really hope they play on his strengths in episode 9.
Mm-hmm.
I
hope so.
Kylo's hands are relatively clean. Mm. The only person I think we've seen him take out on screen in episode 7 is Lor San Tekka.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else is taken out by firing squad.
Yeah.
And then he manages to ruin Finn for all of about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Because he's back in the, you know, in the back to suit thing, the sort of Michelin Man, Mr. Soft kind of back to suit for the beginning of episode 8. So I don't know how much, not a lot of time has passed there. So, you know, he's not giving him any kind of lasting injuries or anything like that, which is a little bit odd. And in hindsight, I kind of wish they'd played on a little bit that Finn wasn't quite himself as a result of what was quite a significant gash to the back.
Yeah, it's kind of a wonderful cliffhanger to end.
Yeah,
Force Awakens, and they didn't do anything with it.
They could have done something with that, I think, and maybe you know, maybe they should have. But it would have been, it also would have been cool to see him kind of using some sort of assistance, you know, like a prosthetic, you know, like a prosthetic, but maybe some sort of frame that kind of keeps his, you know, that helps him heal, but also allows him to move around, because they could have done some really cool visual stuff with that and some special effects to, you know, some sort of rig, you know, like a sort of like the power loader in Aliens, something that's sort of an exoskeleton around his injured parts that helps him heal up, but simultaneously allows him to actually move around and interact with the plot. Just a thought, you know.
Yeah. That's what we haven't seen for a long time.
What's that?
Force lightning.
That's true. It's true. And obviously,
it's,
you know,
fast and full.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see why not, why they can't do it. You know, it's one of those things. But I can't remember where I lost my train of thought. And that's not, this is not the podcast for that, I realise, but
Star Wars. Hey, Solo had a crazy train, didn't it?
This is true. Yes.
Yeah.
Convey X. But yeah, I think that's, I think the Vader cameo thing works for me. You know, like I say, an Anakin cameo would be probably the most the most sense.
Yeah.
Because it would, you know, a Vader cameo is basically just a suit of armor appearing in the room.
Yeah, and it doesn't make a lot of sense.
No,
does it?
Whereas an Anakin cameo is, you know.
Yeah. Hayden's still around, he'll do it.
Exactly. And Hayden seems to have regained the sort of interest in Star Wars again, which he seemed to have lost for a bit. He went very quiet on that front. And then obviously Celebration, he was very warmly welcomed. I think that probably G'd him up a fair bit.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Yeah, indeed. But yeah, Adam, thank you very much for that. I don't know if you expected this to be able to go for some time on that one, but obviously
but there we are.
You're new, so we'll give you that.
It's us.
It happens. It's what TSW do. You want to read the next one from Matt Gilbert?
From Matt Gilbert. Hello, one and all. Hello.
Hello.
My brains have once again been ticking over with thoughts and ideas, and this one pertains to an Obi-Wan movie or maybe even TV series. I was thinking of ways you could make it a different style of show, and that's when Breaking Bad popped into my head. Not that I want Obi-Wan to start dealing and making a heap of coin, pizza on the roof of his hut, anyone, but more of those supreme tense moments you could get from Obi-Wan wanting to do good for the people of Mos Eisley or wherever, but not want to give away who he really is and why he is there. If it were to be a TV show, imagine how epic it would be if the last episode is the Big Bad finding his lightsaber and you're left to think of the consequence of this. You could even have him meet Skywalker as a boy. He never said he's met Ben before. He had only wondered if old Ben could be Obi-Wan. Sorry, he's never said he's never met Ben before. He had only wondered if old Ben could be Obi-Wan. Yeah, totally on board for that.
True, yeah.
Apologies if this email is scatterbrained, but this is typed right up before bed. Take care, guys, and feel free to send some heat waves down under. May the Force be with us. P.S. Solo was incredible, and I cannot wait for the iTunes release.
Sure.
P.P.S. I'm so tired, I somehow managed to get Anencephaly instead of and I in my previous P.S.
Wow.
Okay.
Writing Dolly Parton lyrics would have been very challenging for you, Matt.
Yeah. his picture of the Obi-Wan series, I think he's right in saying that it worked better as a TV series.
Yeah,
and
agreed.
That's the kind of Obi-Wan story I'm totally on board for.
Yeah.
I think the one shots they've done, because what they've seemed to do is when the story arc wraps up in the Marvel Star Wars comic series, they have an issue break, which is Luke reading Ben's journal, and it cuts to a story about
Yoda story as well.
Thank you. And that's been working great so far. And there are things for Obi-Wan to be doing, but I think you're absolutely right in saying he can't be doing anything big.
No.
Because that completely defeats the entire reason that he's there.
Yes.
I think that kind of pitch, brilliant. Yeah. That's what you should be doing.
I totally agree.
Like I say, his main concern should be firstly, keeping an eye on Luke, and secondly, not being seen.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the thing that's never quite gelled for me about the idea of an Obi-Wan especially the ones, the people that say, oh, you could just leave Tatooine. Oh, yeah, that's fine. That can't backfire in any way possible if a Jedi suddenly surfaces near Tatooine.
Yeah.
It doesn't wash. You know, it doesn't
make sense. This man has not played Rebellion.
No, quite so. Especially as everybody, look at it this way. Anybody who realizes who he is and where he is has to die.
Yeah.
And Obi-Wan has to do it because nobody else will do it.
Yeah, I mean, the Spark of Rebellion, the Rebels TV movie pilot episode, the composite one, thing, even in the space of a 40-50 minute mini movie, they convey what a big thing it is for Kanan to show his lightsaber.
Yes.
And exactly. That's times 1,000 for Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Absolutely. He's, you know, he's a well-known Jedi.
Yeah, and Cad Bane disappeared after Order 66.
Yeah.
Kenobi is a legendary figure throughout all of the Clone Wars.
Exactly, he's a respected war general.
Yeah.
You know, and Caleb Dune is not that well known.
No, not at all. No. Okay. He's assumed killed in Order 66.
Exactly. You know, this is the thing. It just doesn't gel for me, the idea that he could be able to just kind of walk around going, hello there, hello there, hello there, hello
which
there.
Is what the internet wants.
It is what the internet wants. Yeah. But I sometimes feel like the internet wants...
needs to be told what it can't have.
The internet wants things, and I don't necessarily think the internet has thought it through. And they just want things, and then they go, this is rubbish.
Yeah. We'll remake it then, yeah, that'll work, mate.
Yeah, not to dwell on that for too long, but...
If people aren't on Twitter, and I envy you. Yeah. Basically, as the fans are trying, or they're saying for $20 million they could remake The Last Jedi, a movie which isn't even a year old yet.
Yeah.
But so far they haven't got the money, and are just assuming Disney's going to give them permission to remake a movie they've just released.
I find it unlikely that they're going to get around the whole copyright thing, but you know, I wish them godspeed in trying.
As does everyone, Frank Oz and Rian Johnson are ripping it out of my mind, and it's lovely to watch.
Of course. I'm happy to move on from that because I don't want to give it too much oxygen.
May I say one thing on the subject?
Sure.
If you're that passionate, how about you remake the other two Matrix movies? That's a much better use of your time and money.
That'd be a great project.
Yeah, or the third Terminator movie we deserve.
That would be so much fun to do, I think.
Yeah.
I'd be up for doing that. Do you know what, actually?
Yeah, right, we're going to do it.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it's Warner, isn't it, the Matrix?
I believe so.
Yeah, so if Warner are listening, and I've no reason to believe you're not, because I'm
checking out a competition.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that if nothing else, TSW has... I've got a conservative estimate that the listeners are in the millions. So, you know, if Warner are listening... I will happily give The Matrix a go if they want to sort of, you know, even if they don't want to reboot it, they just want to tell some new stories in the universe. I'll be up for that. Let me know.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Twitter at Rob Braid Vision. Let's have a chat. So, anyway, yeah, I think Matt's onto something with this whole notion of that he has to go, he has to be undercover, borderline subterranean in terms of how he approaches it. You know, it's he can't be jumping around doing backflips and lightsaber being thrown around everywhere and hello there.
In every scene they do, his motivation should be protect the boy, stay hidden.
Yes, absolutely. But then
and he can be doing stuff, but those two points have to be in his mind at all times.
Yeah, and I feel like that's going to be tricky to keep going for a long time because there's only so many stories you can tell where that's going to be able to be front and center and interesting.
Absolutely, and I think that we touched on it last episode, a TV miniseries is ideal for that.
Yeah, totally. Like a fixed
length. And if Disney are going to push forward with their streaming service, then they could have carte blanche to do whatever they wanted with it.
Totally, yeah.
And that's something Star Trek Discovery kind of used to its strength. They really took advantage of the streaming medium to avoid... Because there's one episode of... and you expect them to be like 45, 50 minutes is the average length for one of those TV shows.
Yeah.
There's an episode that's 35 minutes long in there, and it's perfect. But if it had been on production TV, they'd have had to pad it out of another 15 minutes and probably killed it.
Yeah.
But they took advantage. And so Disney, exploit the new medium's capabilities, because that would be wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Totally agree.
I do have to agree with a point he made here that, yes, Solo was incredible.
Yes, and I'm also looking forward to the iTunes release. Other streaming services are available.
Yeah.
We do. We fulfill our legal obligation. And as for how we managed to get anencephaly instead of andi, I can only imagine the kind of text you send on a regular basis, Matt. You absolute intellectual powerhouse.
Yeah, I could just... I mean, I've got late night texts from Unix that like you type to move your face. So
yeah,
I think it did very well.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been guilty of that in the past. So, you know. Right. So thank you for that, Matt. So the next email is from Derek. So it's a
it is.
Response to last week's discussion about Last Jedi and the ongoing discussion about the Order. So, mm-hmm. You know. So Derek writes, hello again. Hello there.
Hello there.
You guys are great. You guys are great to listen to. Two witty gentlemen having fun discussing a topic they sincerely enjoy. That's
that
the
is the concept
that is
of the show.
Elevator pitch. Yeah, yeah, pretty much. TSW has been fortunate because there seems to be a magic spell that produces good chemistry between the hosts. Yeah, I've been the common thread throughout. Just saying. However, I feel it necessary to hold Brad's feet to the fire before he wanders off past the outer rim into the unknown regions. I do like the fact that he's at least woven it into the universe.
Yeah, for sure.
Here's my rebuttal. While The Last Jedi does tell a personal story, it also tells a significant galaxy-wide story because two major galactic powers are looking for Luke, as per the following quotes. I'm going to not do accents for this because, to be honest, I've forgotten what Snoke sounds like.
It sounds a bit like Christopher Walken, doesn't
he? Don't. Don't make me. Snoke speaking to Ren.
And that's something you could do, but you're not allowed to do the impression anymore.
I've retired it, yeah. There's a reason, and it's a really good reason. Snoke speaking to Ren, and look at you. The deed split your spirit to the bone. You're unbalanced, bested by a girl who'd never held a lightsaber. Oh, they're acknowledging that now. That's good. You failed. Skywalker lives. The seed of the Jedi Order lives. As long as he does, hope lives in the galaxy. I thought you would be the one to snuff it out. Alas, you are no Vader. You're just a child in a mask. Ooh, sick burn. By the way, that statement also supports the idea that the last Jedi in the universe is significant, even if he's not actively engaged in the fight. Fair point. Luke asking, why are you here, Rey from nowhere? Rey says, the Resistance sent me. The First Order has become unstoppable. Rey speaking to Ren, murderous Snake, you're too late. You lost. I found Skywalker. Snoke speaking to Rey, young fool, it was I who bridged your minds. I stoked Ren's conflicted soul. I knew he was not strong enough to hide it from you, and you were not wise enough to resist the bait. And now you will give me Skywalker. So this interesting, actually, as an aside, before I carry on, after we talked about it last week, where we were talking about how the search for Luke had been given up completely. I think that's still true, but actually this popped into my head, this next quote, as a thing of there was a point where they acknowledged that the search had stopped. But it was quite a long way into the film.
Mm-hmm.
Snoke says, I did not expect Skywalker to be so wise. We will give him and the Jedi Order the death he desires. After the rebels are gone, we will go to his planet and obliterate the entire island. So Derek goes on to write, The Last Jedi isn't a perfect movie, but in my book, it's still a grade A film. Like Brad, I've only seen it once, but I deeply appreciate it. 40-plus years down the road, and Lucasfilm is still creating new and passionate fans that will keep the Star Wars adventure going for a long time. Hopefully one day I can listen to TSW with my grandkids. Keep up the good work, and thank you, Rob, for the kind words. So that's about his podcast and his voice.
Yep.
Regards, Derek in Denver, Colorado. Do you want to address this, or do you want to do the PS?
Yeah, sure. All the scripts and quotes he's provided, like I say, a lot of this has been forgotten because I only saw it once, and it was a... I'll go with what he's saying, and I will rewatch it with his perspective in mind, I think.
Yeah.
Last Jedi isn't a perfect movie, whether it's still a grade A film. A large part of, and I say, I think, hello, listeners, I don't hate The Last Jedi.
It's okay, you don't have to keep saying it.
I kind of feel like I do in the current climate.
You'll get used to
it. Yeah, Last Jedi isn't a perfect movie, isn't still a grade A movie. A large part of the problem is kind of touched into what I addressed earlier. Yes, The Last Jedi is a grade A movie. It's beautiful. It's brilliantly written. It's very clever. And it's wonderfully performed. My issues is that I don't know it's a grade A Star Wars saga movie.
Okay. That's fair enough.
That's kind of, and my feelings on Rian Johnson is I'm looking forward so much to Rian Johnson's trilogy kind of doing his own thing another corner of the universe. I think he's going to knock that out of the absolute park. It's going to be amazing. But some of what happened with Last Jedi and Rian Johnson's involvement there still, and as we've just gone on, and we've spent a lot of time on this episode, so I'm not going to reiterate it.
That's okay.
But we spent a bit of time talking about plot threads that were dropped or mishandled, and that's the issue I still have with it. But it is a wonderful film. It's just I don't know if it fits with the rest of the saga in a way that it was supposed to.
It's tricky, isn't it? Because we also, I was listening to the Retro Ink podcast today, and they were talking about episodes 1, 2, and 3. And one of the things they said about episode 8, which stuck with me, was that it's the second part of a trilogy we haven't seen the conclusion of yet. So it's hard to know.
Yeah.
Without that in mind, where it's going to fit in the overall space.
Yeah,
the advantage we have of every other film we're rating is when it comes to ordering, is they've been concluded. Yeah.
I mean, you're younger than me, aren't you? By a couple of years, I think.
Yeah, a couple of years, yeah.
Yeah, so we're both too young to have known Empire without a Jedi.
Yes, this is true.
But we did see Attack of the Clones without a Sith.
We did.
And I seem to remember coming out of that, apart from kind of general confusions of how a lot of the plot was kind of not that well explained. That was kind of coming out of that was, well, how are they going to wrap all that up? Because he's not even Darth Vader yet. We were kind of half expecting him to become Vader in the second one and then end up Vader in the suit in the third one, is what myself and a lot of friends were feeling.
Yeah.
So and it is a similar vibe. You're not wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tricky one because, you know, in the same way, I think the difference is we had the hindsight view of we knew what 4, 5, and 6 were going to be, and we knew the space that kind of existed in the canon, the Legends canon at the time. So we knew about things like Outbound Flight. We knew about the Jedi Purge. We didn't know about Order 66 specifically, but we knew about the Jedi Purge and Outbound Flight. And it was there was a lot of questions of, well, are they going to do that? Are they going to put that in there? Because they sort of have to, if they're going to do it, they're going to have to do it early. And then what do they do for the rest of the movie? And how do they make that fit? Because one of the things that about episode 2 that doesn't really work for me is how jarring the juxtaposition is between the Obi-Wan and the Anakin threads. Because it's two very kind of different tones that they're striking. Yeah. One is a sort of, you know, a mystery with the occasional swashbuckling, and then one is a love story. With occasional acting. Very ploddy, really. If you just look at it in isolation, it's quite slow.
Yeah.
And then Geonosis, they kind of re-engage later, but by then we've already, you know, we've been through these two very different narratives that like I say, very jarring apart.
Yeah.
It's a little bit weird. So the thing about Last Jedi is I think where you get the contrast is when we left episode 2, we knew where they could take it and we knew where they had to get to. Obviously, we don't have that with episode 8. We don't know what they're doing next. I'm not sure. I'm not convinced Lucasfilm know, which is a concern. But that's a concern we've trodden.
That's JJ's problem.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it almost feels like they should have given Rian Johnson his own trilogy straight away and given JJ the saga trilogy.
I agree completely.
Yeah, it's you know, in the same way, I'm not saying that Last Jedi is a bad film. There's lots that I like about it. I totally agree with you. It's a visually stunning film. It's very well acted. The performances are great. The character development of certain characters is amazing. Certain characters are garbage, but some of the characters are so good that it almost offsets the other ones. And it's worth
mentioning that we can't blame all of this on Rian Johnson. There were other factors at work as well.
100%.
Aren't you, Kath?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a whole story group whose job it is to tie this stuff together. And I don't know, I'm not sure what they're working on and like where they fit into the process, because it does seem like they should be the ones with the overarching narrative.
Yeah. I think we've got off into weeds on this. Did you want to do the postscript?
Yeah, sure. So Derek adds a PS, which is Dave Filoni is second on my Mount Rushmore. When it comes to storytelling.
Good idea.
Yeah, when it comes to storytelling, iconic characters, memorable moments, deep mythology, artwork, direction, and great performances, I think Rebels can go toe-to-toe with the OT prequel and sequel trilogies. I think he's absolutely spot on.
And I think he's absolutely right.
Yeah,
Dave Filoni is one of those. I'm annoyed I didn't think of Dave Filoni. I kind of went very old trilogy with original trilogy, not old trilogy. I went very old. I went to say old man and original trilogy at the same time.
Yeah,
I did go very original trilogy with my selection, and maybe I shouldn't have. Maybe I should have had George Lucas, Dave Filoni, John Williams, and James Ocino.
Maybe. But you know, it's one of these things that. You're going to get four ultimately because that's how Rushmore works. So you can only do so much with it. Mm-hmm. But I think I absolutely agree. You know, Dave Filoni always struck me as somebody who might end up at the helm one day. You know, of the whole shebang. And it's probably only a matter. It's probably only a matter of time.
Yeah, that would be absolutely wonderful.
Yeah,
because he gets it as a fan who grew up with it.
Yeah, and he works very closely under George.
Very good writer.
Yes, indeed.
An absolutely amazing writer who not only, and it's a rare thing, especially among Star Wars writers, he's able to work brilliantly with his own characters and other people's.
Yes, very true. Because there are certain authors, especially in the Legend stuff, who were very, very good with their own characters and sort of gave more superficial treatment to other characters, which is very true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But there you go. So thank you for that, Derek. It's always nice to hear from you. So we're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk a bit of Star Wars news because there's been a couple of extra bits that have come in while we've been recording as well.
Oh wow! Yeah, I love always when that happens. It makes you feel like a proper journalist.
All right, cool. We're back after the break.
All right, see you soon.
And we're back. So it's time for some Star Wars news. So there's some in the show notes, and then there's some that have come in kind of off, you know. Mm-hmm. Random, so I'm just going to go through. We'll go through those as we go along. So the first piece I saw this week was an excerpt from the forthcoming Thrawn Alliances book. Establishes that their first Vader's first crossing paths with Thrawn actually happened during the Clone Wars.
Okay.
So there's a little excerpt on the Star Wars website. There's a link to it in the show notes with an audiobook version. Mark Thompson, naturally. So that's always a nice result. And it seems quite entertaining as well. You know, mm-hmm. it's got that sort of Thrawn's comes off quite stuffy, and Anakin comes off quite petulant, so it works quite well for the characters.
Yeah.
And I was already interested in the book, and now I'm even more kind of geared up for it because Thrawn and Vader anyway, and then
and
a bit of backstory. Yeah, and a bit of backstory. You know, that's mm-hmm. always nice. So there's that. Speaking of the Clone Wars, so this year marks the 10th anniversary of the Clone Wars TV series. So in celebration of this, at San Diego Comic-Con this year, there will be a panel on July 19th, hosted, I believe, by Emmy Ratcliffe, which will include cast and crew from the show.
Awesome.
So that should be a good time, I think. I think people will enjoy that, I reckon. If I know Star Wars fans, and I know several, I think they're going to enjoy that. So something that just popped into the inbox. It's only a small one, but the date has been announced for Series 4 of Rebels on DVD and Blu-ray. So if you're not a digital purchaser and you wish to own a hard copy, you'll be able to do that on July 31st.
Okay, cool.
So it's not far off.
Mm.
What I'm more interested
in... Is that worldwide?
I believe so. It doesn't specify in the email I got from Lucasfilm, but it's it seems to be... yeah, it does. It doesn't say for definite, but it seems to be.
Okay.
But I'm looking forward to that. You know, it's something I need to pick up actually and get more into because I've not caught up on Rebels in the slightest. So I probably should fix that because I hear it's very good. The final series, particularly.
Mm.
What I'm more interested in at the moment is when Solo's coming out.
Was that about? It came out about a month ago.
Yeah, 35 days I think is.
But 12 weeks is normal, isn't it?
12 weeks, 12 weeks was what we got for The Last Jedi. That seemed quite quick.
I'm going on kind of half remembered conversation here, but I think they tried to do home release closer than 12 weeks, and a lot of cinema owners kicked up a fuss about it. So I think 12 weeks is standard now.
Yeah, I think 3 to 6 months is kind of the range, depending on what it is. But Last Jedi seemed very fast, and my theory at the time, which I've never seen any reason to believe or disbelieve any further, is that they were clearing their decks for Solo, trying to get everything out there so that we had a kind of not a clean palate, but Solo would act as a palate cleanser for anybody who was sort of in two minds about Last Jedi. Because by then, everything associated with Last Jedi was kind of out in the ether, and it was just Solo was the only thing on the horizon. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but that's the kind of... That was an observation that struck me, which I thought was interesting. So, yeah, the big piece that has seemed dropped in the last couple of hours is that Amy Hennig, who was the creative director of Naughty Dog, who obviously most famous for the Uncharted games on PlayStation, has apparently left EA.
Okay.
And the Star Wars title that she was working on is on hold.
Okay.
Has been sort of parked indefinitely.
I didn't know she was working on one.
She was indeed. It was very, you know, there wasn't a lot to say about it, to be honest. So this is from The Verge. It's a Vancouver studio of EA.
Mm-hmm.
They're working on something apparently quoted as saying pretty different. So I don't know what kind of game that suggests. Maybe a episodic story-driven adventure. Who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems that development has stalled. Oh, and there's now a very different game in the works. So she's now working on
Star
something
Wars
different.
Pinball.
Maybe, but I don't know. It might not even be Star Wars from the looks of this, from the way this article's worded. It might be that she's been switched from Star Wars to something completely different. But it's important to note that this is not the same game that was talked about at E3. This is a separate game. So the Fallen Order, the one that Respawn are working on, which is scheduled for next year, is still on the cards. It's nothing related in the slightest. So, EA don't seem to have a lot of luck with Star Wars. And some of it's of their own volition.
Star Wars is getting fed up with EA.
Maybe. Who knows? You know, it's... I could certainly understand it. There's not a lot of output there. I realise that obviously multiplayer only games are tricky in terms of how much you measure their success because people pick it up at different times.
I think the loot box fiasco.
It hurt them
a lot of tail in the last year. Disney don't want to be a facts aside. I'm putting facts aside on purpose here because it was a PR. Problem.
Yeah.
Disney won't want to be associated with what could be perceived as gambling, where they make kids' cartoons and family movies.
Sure, absolutely.
They wouldn't have been happy about that at all.
No, indeed. This is, you know, it's very true. I think it's obviously there's the saying that there's no such thing as bad PR, but I think that one is definitely when it's such disjointed PR from your usual message, that's a different kettle of fish altogether.
Certainly the whole loot boxing. I don't think it won any new fans. No one went, oh, I wasn't going to buy Battlefront, but I heard they got loot boxes, so now I'm definitely in.
Yeah, it's one of those things. And I mean, obviously, there's the whole, a lot of people are very dead set against loot boxes in general, just for it doesn't matter how you implement them. Some people are just never going to take them on board. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that there's a fair crossover between that and the kind of people who would pick up Battlefront and play something like that, you know, competitively is the wrong word, but you know, in a sort of PvP context.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I think it's, you know, it's very detrimental to their, something like that's detrimental to their brand. And there's something to be said for, at least they're talking about the game, but when they're talking about it in the context of, you know, something that is very much adult skewed, which is say, like you say, anything that's perceived as gambling,
mm-hmm. Whether it was or not, that was what it was made to sound like.
Totally, yeah. And I mean, it was very much spun, you know, in a way that was very unsympathetic to any notions that it wasn't gambling. But it's a very tough one, and I can imagine that. You know, I can't imagine EA were particularly happy about it because they're very much a company that's aiming to make games for everybody. Yeah. Obviously, they publish The Sims, they publish Plants vs. Zombies, all this sort of kid-friendly stuff.
It seems to free. The whole loot box in Battlefront, I'm a casual video gamer anyway, but the loot box, when I opened up Battlefront 2, the loot box, it's just like, this makes it feel like a freemium mobile game now.
Yeah, yeah. Did sort of...
I've bought the game, just let me play with the game.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those... I mean, the mechanic has been there for some time. It's one of those things where, you know, some people don't like to grind. And, you know, you want to be able to accommodate those players. I think the big thing that people objected to was that the heroes were locked behind not a paywall, but it was a paywall of sorts because it was in-game currency, but it was quite a high level of in-game currency. The only way to really get it was to spend the money if you want to get them in a timely fashion. And people, and you know, there's this kind of mindset about stuff that's perceived to be part of the game and is locked behind a paywall. And say the like you say, whatever you think of the perception of that, there's that perception there. So when that was kind of, oh, well, I have to grind to, I have to grind or spend money to get the heroes that, you know, in the first Battlefront were just there. It's sort of seen as like a, you know, it's seen as a step backwards, which not unreasonably so, you know, so that's kind of where it all started. And then once it was kind of established that there were things like different guns in the loot boxes and stuff like that, and it wasn't just a question of grinding or paying the currency, that was when people really started to kind of take umbrage with it, because you know the stats on these guns are different. So you know, whether you see it as like there's that sort of phrase pay to win, that's kind of a difficult one to transplant on. But at the same time, even if the stats are balanced in a way that all the different guns balance in some way, there's a, there's again there's going to be that perception there of I'm paying to get a gun, to get the gun that might be better than the other gun. Thus, I'm paying to be better at the game. And you know, say I can understand the sentiment behind that, certainly. So as long as, you know, if they, I can deal with unlockable things, I can deal with cosmetic upgrades for things like Fallen Order, but I'm very much hoping that it's, you know, just a single player kind of driven experience with, you know, I say maybe some cosmetic touches for like, you know, maybe you can buy a costume where you can play as Akbar, that sort of thing. Why not, right? Because they probably, they've got to be Mon Cal Jedi in the mix, right? Obviously, they had Legends ones. They had Silgal, was it? The healer?
Yeah, that something was like that. Admiral something or the other in Kieran Gillen's Darth Vader comic. He's a Mon Calamari of almost like a General Grievous type body.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes, I have heard of him, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's so there is one in the mix, at least one. So that's good. Yeah, so those are the kind of the big news things out of Star Wars. There's not been much to talk about this week. There's rumors doing the rounds. There's rumors about Obi-Wan being filmed for episode 9. It might be, you know, it could work in terms of it's conceivable that it could be doable because obviously Force visions are a thing.
Yeah.
You know, diaries of Ben Kenobi are a thing. They've already used that to tell Ben Kenobi stories in narrative devices. Maybe in a film that would be a bit of a weird juxtaposition, but you know, they could, that's an avenue they could explore. So there are ways and means to make it work. But I say, there's nothing out of StarWars.com about, there's nothing out of Lucasfilm about Ewan McGregor. There's nothing about, there's no word, there's no update on this whole, are the standalones still happening? Are they not? It's all just nebulous. Everything's very, you know, everything's very.
Yeah,
it's neither one way nor the other, and it's all kind of a bit weird. It makes it difficult for, you know, Star Wars podcasters to, if they, especially if they have.
We've done all right tonight.
We have. I mean, we've been very lucky. We are very lucky in the sense that we get really great questions from really great people, and we get a lot.
Whatever
of
you do, whatever you do, don't stop throwing questions at us.
Oh, by no means. Yeah, please, please, chuck as many as you can.
Go on. Yeah. Be your worst.
Absolutely. Yeah, so that's the news. I mean, like I say, there's not a lot to, there's not a lot of tangible stuff to talk about this week. It's very much rumors. Oh, there was some, a couple of bits. Star Wars, Last Jedi did well at the, is it the Saturn Awards? A sort of a sci-fi film.
Oh yeah, Last Jedi won something, and Rebels won something.
Yeah, I think Rian Johnson got something particular, maybe for screenplay. I want to say screenplay.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So well done. You know, anybody, everybody involved in that. Good for you.
Yeah.
Awards are always nice to win, I hear.
Yes. I'm told.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So as far as I understand it, you know, we've been nominated for some before, but always the bridesmaids. Cool. Well, thank you very much for listening to episode 125 of Talk Star Wars.
And I enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I say, we've been very lucky and we've continued to be so for the excellent quality of questions and the quantity of questions we get from our wonderful, beloved listener base.
Bring them on.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep them coming. So you can do that by emailing podcast@talkstarwars.co.uk or talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com or tweeting at talkstarwars via either DM or just a normal, you know, the mention-y kind.
Yeah,
those are the best ways, I would say, to get your questions in. And obviously, iTunes reviews are always appreciated. We will always read them out verbatim. So if you have a project or something you'd like to plug, you can get it in that way. And if you pardon the expression, umai. And we will read them verbatim. So there's that. Brad, where can people find you in between shows on social media?
You can search for Brad Harmer Barnes on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at RealBradHB. And you can find my books on Amazon.
Yes, you can. And you can use...
And Audible.
Yes, and Audible. And you can use the Amazon widgets that are available on talkstarwars.co.uk, which is our lovely website, where all the shows are shared. You can go back through and see all the different catalogue stuff. You can see our different bits and pieces we do in addition to the main Talk Star Wars shows. So the Roundtable, the TSW Comics podcast, the TSW Toy Box podcast. There's a ton of cool stuff. So if you like podcasts and Star Wars, talkstarwars.co.uk is the place to go. And obviously, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network, which includes us and I think at least eight other fine Star Wars podcasts.
It's quite a lot.
It's a lot. Absolutely.
It's more than I can listen to in a week.
Indeed. Oh, yeah. In my experience, absolutely true. And you can find that at starwarscommonwealth.com. As for me, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Rob Wade Vision. I'm also the person behind the at Talk Star Wars Twitter account. And you can also interact with Emotionally 14, which we are both affiliated with.
Oh, yeah.
And we do a ton of fun stuff there, Star Wars related as well. There's the Fire When Ready YouTube series. And we do find a way to bring Star Wars up in most of our conversations on our various podcasting platforms.
Let us know if you want us to see more Star Wars gaming stuff.
Yes. Absolutely.
Whether that's us streaming Battlefront or playing Rebellion or Armada or Legion, whatever, let us know. Because we're going to be doing that sort of stuff anyway. It's just a case of switching my camera on.
We can make all of those things work.
Let us know what you want to see.
Let us know.
Yeah.
Let us know. So thank you very much for listening to Talk Star Wars this week. And may the Force be with you.